This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Environmentalists were up in arms when the Obama administration approved seismic blasting off the Atlantic coast. So imagine how happy they were when he canceled that decision. He denied permits to blast and put a hold on oil and gas drilling through 2020. Well, earlier this spring, Donald Trump took a step to undo that environmental legacy. He issued an executive order that opened up our coast back to seismic blasting and the possibility of offshore drilling. Adam Wagner is an environment reporter with the Star News in Wilmington. Doug Nowacek is a professor of conservation technology at Duke University and an expert on marine ecology and acoustics. He has testified before Congress about the impact of seismic blasting. Adam, welcome to the State of Things.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Doug, good to have you on the show as well.
Thanks for having me.
Adam, let me start with you and ask you about this executive order. What does it actually do?
So it basically indicates that the Trump administration wants to reopen energy activity off of the coast in areas from the Atlantic to Alaska. But in our case, we're focusing obviously on North Carolina.
And so it allows this seismic blasting, which is a testing to try to find to see if there's any oil, whether or not you're going to drill. Originally, the Obama administration okayed that, and then there was pushback from the environmental community. They said, okay, no, we're going to withhold any permits on blasting, and now the Trump administration says, well, go ahead. Is there a time? Do we know when these could start?
We're looking at probably 8 to 10 years on any true drilling activity. The Trump administration right now is working on getting the 6 permits that were denied reapproved, and there's been a lot of pushback from environmental groups, including the SELC, the Southern Environmental Law Center, and the North Carolina Coastal Federation, to try to guarantee that those stay denied. But BOEM is indicating that they want them approved.
Right, and those are environmental groups, but also residents along the coast are up in arms. There was some pushback on the part of coastal communities. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's residents and also governments. You're seeing the previous time this happened, about 2015, you saw about 32 governments pass resolutions either in opposition to the testing itself or the actual drilling. Those were varied in their nature. This time, you're already seeing some communities begin to organize in opposition to it. We had a couple rallies down here in southeastern North Carolina. There's a meeting early next month where environmentalists are going to try to organize and make a more formal opposition. But a lot of this is moving pretty fast. I mean, there have been times in doing the reporting on this where I've called experts and said, hey, this just happened, and I'm breaking the news to them on the phone. So you're just sort of beginning to see that this time.
And the politics of this do cut in funny ways. We can see that down in Florida, a Republican-controlled state that has outlawed offshore drilling by state rule. Now, whether or not that's going to hold up, but they have pushed back very firmly because of its impact on tourism and other fears that they have in a Republican-controlled state. So the politics are not terribly clear on this, or they don't fall along normal fault lines. But Doug Nowacek, I want to ask you a question about what exactly seismic blasting is. Maybe we'll start there. What happens when I use one of these things?
Yeah, thanks. It's seismic impulses or blasts, as their folks like to call them, are basically they are the loudest sound that people put into the ocean. They are a replacement for what used to happen, which was throwing a stick of dynamite over the back of a boat and then listening to what happens when it reverberates through the water and down into the bottom. So just quickly, these are the so-called guns. Are they release a little pulse of really highly condensed pressurized air, and it basically creates a small localized explosion. And the sound waves or the pressure waves from that travel down through the water, down into the bottom, and they bounce around, and they bounce around differently depending on if they hit rock or oil or gas or what have you, and then they come back up through the water column and are received at the surface on what are called streamers or long hydrophone arrays, and the data from those impulses tell the folks where there may be deposits. And the pulses go off about every 10 seconds, and they the surveys, as they typically go on, they go on 24/7 for, they can go a month at a time, sort of doing a lawnmower style fashion around a particular area.
So every 10 seconds, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for, what did you say, a month, 2 months?
The permits as they're put in, as I understand them, are really for, you know, for a year at a time.
Well,
and
so
they do have an estimated number of shot lines that they're going to do, or they estimate the number of shots in different ways. But they can go on for days, weeks, months at a time.
And how wide an area do you cover with this kind of testing?
Well, that's a good question. The initial surveys, I think the way they're set up are so-called two-dimensional or 2D surveys. And the lines can be spaced by a couple of kilometers. When they get into more higher resolution, the three-dimensional surveys to actually look for where they might drill, they can be piled on top of each other, but separated by just a few hundred meters. And I think another thing that's just worth bringing out is that these initial surveys, the six permits that are there, they all have their own areas that they are proposing to do the surveys, and they may or may not be areas that eventually are leased. But they also, interestingly, they overlap right off the coast of North Carolina, right off the coast of Cape Hatteras at a place that folks like to call the Point. And it's a place that's worth talking about more when we get to it.
Well, let's get to that now, and that is the environmental effect. What effect can this have?
Yeah, starting from the worst, the chances of an animal actually being killed instantaneously by one set of pulses that goes off from the array of those guns is a very unlikely event. It's an unlikely event. Well, the two things that we worry about the most, and this is primarily with mammals, but it also has the potential to impact turtles as well as fish of a variety of sorts, is that the sound fills the water and it makes it hard, much more difficult for the animals to communicate, to use sound for all the things that they do use it for, which is pretty extensive in many cases. And the other thing is that sound, we have regulations for workplaces where people are not allowed to be exposed to certain levels of sound over an 8-hour day because, among other things, it can impact your hearing eventually, but it also raises stress levels. And it may be kind of funny to think, oh, well, the whales are stressed out, but they're mammals like we are, and an ongoing stress response, which noise definitely does. Think about a jackhammer outside your window that's going off every 10 seconds all day long. It just has the physiological response of raising your stress level.
So. But it does sound like it's kind of a temporary thing. I mean, 2 months sounds like a long time on the one hand. On the other hand, they'll be gone in 2 months, and everybody can come back and live a normal life.
Right. Fair point. So having six surveys go off in the same area means that they're going to stagger themselves to some degree. So it's possible they could be going on for longer than that. The other part about it is, and this is a little bit down the line, is if it does get to that point, when a company, one of the oil and gas companies, which are separate from the G&G companies, the geophysical companies, when one of the oil companies would purchase a lease and set up shop, so to speak, they'll want to reshoot that area every 3 to 5 years to track the resource as they extract it. And so for some areas, certainly not the whole Atlantic coast by any means, but for whatever areas they're actually focused on, there will be repeat seismic every 3 to 5 years.
And you talked about this place off of the Point, off of Cape Hatteras.
Yeah.
Is there a particular significance to what might happen there?
Yeah, absolutely. Geologically, it looks to be one of the most promising areas along the Atlantic coast for oil and gas reserves. It also happens to be, the way we kind of think about it, is it's like the Serengeti in the middle of the Atlantic. It is the highest density and diversity of mammals in the entire Northwest Atlantic, so the whole Atlantic coast of the U.S. that we know of. Any given day, we go out there and we'll see 3, 4, 5 species of whales and dolphins, a couple species of turtles. You may look down from your boat and see a school of hammerhead sharks swimming under your boat. There's seabirds flying all over the place. It really is like being out in the Serengeti with a bunch of wild animals out in the middle of the Atlantic.
Adam Wagner, when you talked about the protest, both governments, individuals, and, of course, environmental groups, let's talk now about the individuals and the residents and governments. What's their main concern?
Well, the biggest thing is that Eastern North Carolina's economy, especially on the coast, is in large measure based on selling yourself as a tourist destination. And I was talking to a a political official yesterday about this who has not been out there on this yet. I just sort of asked him, where are you on this? And he said, without the beaches, if anything were to impact the beaches, be it seismic testing, be it drilling itself, we're pretty much just another rural county in North Carolina. We're no longer a destination county. And the big fear is that anything that could impact that destination county status, it would be just incredibly harmful to the economy here.
Doug, is there a middle ground here? Is it either blast or don't blast? Or is there some way that you can sort of, if you felt you needed this oil, try to find the oil and do less damage?
Yeah, great question, Frank. So there are some alternative technologies, and that is one of the things that that I wanted to talk about. I mean, the seismic is a tool for looking for oil and gas reserves. It's also used for research purposes to look at geological formations and things like that. It's even used to site wind farms, but it's used just one time to look very shallow at very shallow hazards when they would locate wind farms, and it's only used once. So that's worth noting. There are other technologies out there that are just about ready for prime time, and they produce lower initial energy. They may have the same total energy, but they have other advantages, like they can be tuned to a narrow set of frequencies that would impact fewer animals. And there are a lot of other mitigation measures that certainly we're smart enough to use that could lessen the impact. So there's definitely some options out there that we should consider if this is the road that we want to go down.
I want to thank you both, Doug Nowacek, a professor of conservation technology at Duke, and Adam Wagner, regional environment reporter with the Wilmington Star News. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you
very much for having me.
Just ahead, we're going to stay at the beach and explore the unique communities of the Outer Banks Byway. And you will hear that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.